So tonight marks the ending of this series that we've been going through based out of Chasing Francis when we looked at some of the keywords that came out of the manifesto there. And it's the ending of a journey, but always with endings there's an opportunity for new beginning. And that's kind of what comes out of the manifesto in the book. He gives this manifesto of all his kind of what he's come to a conclusion about the way things are in life or how he's been impacted with them, but then it's this opportunity for a new beginning. And a little bit of spoiler alert, that's really how kind of the book thrusts forward into newness of opportunity, a new way to consider life, and that's what happens to the character in the book. And so tonight we consider the final key word we looked at transcendence, community, beauty, dignity, and meaning, and I've really enjoyed this opportunity to hear voices from the community, other people sharing how these words impacted them and how these words are influencing them in the places that they find themselves. And it's been really encouraging to me to hear other voices. And tonight we have Kirk True. He's going to share a few words around, I'm just filling in time as you walk forward, so around meaning. And he's freshly back on his own trip to Italy.
That's right. Yeah. So.
Okay, so a couple things. When I came up to Chris, I said I'd really like to read this book last week, so I finished it this week. So I kind of wish I had read it before I heard everyone else speak. But actually hearing Chantel speak last week, it gave me some thought, because she talked about being very proud of the work she does with United Way, and also thinking about talking to her husband Scott. Scott's talked a lot about his work in College of Education right now, getting through that program, and his own passion in that, which is refreshing. I have been through a College of Education program myself, and so it's nice. It's good reflective stuff, and his passion as a parent. But I work for an agency where we help people who are underemployed or unemployed. Underemployed means that they only work, I think it's less than 25 hours a week. So people who come into this agency, they're looking to figure out, well, where will my career path be? Or they often say they're looking for a resume. It might be that their social worker is down their neck. They don't really tell me that, but that's often the case. So that's part of why they're there. But they are searching for some form of meaning in work. And so one of the assessment tools we use looks at what their values and interests are. And so our hope is that they'll come up with a long-term plan. But people are not employed for a lot of reasons. They may have unsupportive family. They've developed questionable habits. They might just have been in an industry that didn't match them, or there's just a shortage of work. You know, there's way more reasons than that, too. But it's become apparent to me that when people do have meaning in their work, it's easy. Or if they can actually just see meaning in their work, it's easy for them to work. But when they can't see that meaning, it's hard to work. So on that thought, I was reading through the book, and there's this quote here: "People are meaning seekers. We all want to be part of something larger than ourselves. Our world is filled with people who have no big story that makes sense of their lives, and they're hungry for it." Now, this is a bit of a transition, but I did freshly go to Italy, and one thing that was apparent to me, now let's see, am I going the right way, Chris? Okay, so that's not far from where I stayed. But something that became apparent to me was I was kind of blown away by the buildings themselves and the architecture, and that people would build right into the side of hills and haul up materials and stuff. Things would last, you know, hundreds of years. And I was kind of going, whoa, this is something else. And we also came across some, and then one day we were, kind of a weird transition, but one day we were, Aaron said, oh, okay, Kirk, let's go walk up there. So I said, okay, sure, well, let's go walk up there. And it was close to, sun was coming down. So, and that was, so that's St. Francis. And so she goes, oh, that's what the book's about. I go, oh, okay, that's pretty neat. And so that's him with the wolf. You might remember mention of that. So that was just thought that was kind of neat. So that was in the same town that we stayed. But then coming across some of, actually, just let me back up, we walked further up, and there was a monastery up the hill, and so somebody who was working in the monastery said, oh, can you sign off on this paper? We get funding based on how many signatures we have, so based on tourism. So we did. It was quite beautiful, and then they closed minutes later. And then it was very dark, and we didn't walk much further up. It was, you know, a little afraid. So, but then, later on, we ended up, towards the end of our trip, Aaron said, well, we need to go to the Duomo. And so this is the Duomo in Milan, and it's huge. And, it, you know, everybody in this is immaculately dressed, much better than I ever am. So this is, you can pay a certain amount of money, go up top, walk around. So just a visual of that. And just intense kind of architecture and carving and stuff. A work of hundreds of years, right? I didn't take any pictures in the Duomo. I'm not a jerk. You know, I follow what they ask, right? So, and, you know, some more architecture there. And yeah, so a little bit of Milan looking over. And so, like I said, it became apparent to me, you know, people would work towards a cause that they wouldn't necessarily see the fruit of within their lifetime. They would build things, and I assume people would die, because some of that just looks a little sketchy to me. In different times with different apparatuses to keep you in place, right? Hello. There we go. So there you go. There's the Duomo. I guess I forgot to send Chris one other picture. When we were staying in a different place in Lake Como, there was this one, and I wish I had sent the picture now, of this church that was built way up in the hillside. And we went on this boat taxi, and the boat taxi driver, he goes, you have to be very religious to go there. It's only open 1 month of the year. I wish I had the visual for you. But anyway, I found it funny. But that sort of dedication to sacred space and building something way out, why would you do that up in these hills? And it gave me lots of pause for thought about what is meaning and what is, how does a person feel that they're contributing something greater than themselves? And that's what the quote relates to is, you know, how when we do have meaning, when we do feel we are a part of something bigger, that's worthwhile. It's much easier to be engaged in the world, work, volunteer activities, whatever it is. Thanks, Kirk. That was great. And as I said, I really enjoyed this opportunity to hear the community voice. And if you ever there's a story that you're like, this is a great story I'd like to share with the community, just send me a message and we can always build it into the service time and just share, you know, how God is moving in our lives. So please always feel free to say, hey, there's something I want to share, and send me a text, send me an email, and we can always build that into our community gathering time. So I have a few thoughts on meaning as well. And I think actually when reading the meaning section of the book, I think I kind of was like, that nails it a little bit more than I had expected in the other kind of keywords. And this kind of goes through the wrestling of evangelicalism. He talks about his journey and how he identifies himself now. And he wants to be a come-and-see church as opposed to labeled an evangelical. And I mentioned this in a few messages and in a blog post I did about Fitch a little while ago where I kind of went through this. What does it mean to be an evangelical? Can I even like the word anymore? And so I read a David Fitch book and kind of went through that wrestling of what it means and those type of things. And so sometimes you go through these experiences where you kind of question the things that you connect meaning to as far as self-identification or who you are or what story you are a part of and what you're journeying with. And that's exactly what happened to the main character in this Chasing Francis. He has this experience that causes him to question who he is and what he's held dear and what he has found meaningful and associated meaning to in his life. And so I think these type of journeying moments and these type of what's going on here, where am I, what's meaningful, who am I type of questions happen in these different
course, different places in our life where we then have to engage these questions. And sometimes, whether metaphorically or literally, you go up and you throw your hands up in the air, and when I'm reading, that actually happens. I'm quite an animated reader. I don't just sit there. I'm like, what? So you throw your hands up in the air, and you say something like, Hevel, Hevelim, Ha-Ka'ol, Hevel, or meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. And you'll recognize at least the second reading of that as from the book of Ecclesiastes in the beginning point of that. And I've taken to referring to Ecclesiastes as Kohelet. That's the Hebrew title of the word, of the book. And one of the reasons I feel like it kind of preserves this enigmatic characteristic of the book. But to be fair, the English name of the book comes from the Greek translation of the Hebrew, and it is a really good translation. But nevertheless, Kohelet is what I'm going to refer to it as. But when we get to the passage we're looking at, you'll notice on the screen it says Ecclesiastes, because that's what it says in your pew Bibles. So, but the book of Kohelet, and Kohelet the teacher, or the gatherer of, Kohelet means to gathering, or and that's where Ecclesiastes, the one who gathers there. Teacher is often how it's translated, but it's probably a teacher in an assembly. Anyway, sorry. A search for meaning. I'm searching for a meaningful sentence right now. So, it's a search for meaning, a purpose to everything. What is meaningful? These are the questions that are in the book. And there's different events and situations and things that we associate meaning to. It's not always universal. And I think of we just celebrated the 25-year anniversary of the Berlin Wall coming down around Berlin. And this was a very, very meaningful event for German people, especially for the East Berliners who were unable to cross the wall and to visit family and to live outside of the confines that they were in. But for me, as a 9-year-old in northern BC, this event was functionally meaningless. It didn't change anything. I didn't even know really what was going on except for that there was something on the news that night. I don't even remember it, to be honest. We're talking about this with Leona because she's remembering being in Bonn and the former capital of Germany, or the capital at that time and then soon to be the former capital. How this was a very meaningful event for everybody around. But for me, it wasn't meaningless. It was meaningless. And this is how sometimes events in histories have a great meaning for one of us, but they don't necessarily have that strong meaning for another person. This happens in experiences and how we relate to different things. Now, Kohelet is wrestling with these things. He's wrestling with the journey. That meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, everything is meaningless. Quote. It comes at the beginning of the book of Kohelet, and then it comes at the end as well. It's kind of the bookends as he's wrestling with all these things in life. And it's important to deal with the word hevel in Hebrew, and it's translated by the New Living Translation and many other translations as meaningless. And this kind of confuses the meaning of the book because it's almost like meaningless is no purpose or no worth, no value, and no idea. And the word is connected more to like a fleeting breath that is there and then you can't grasp it. It's gone. You exhale and it's not that you can't grasp hold of it. It's beyond our grasp. It's moving forward. It's not something that we can then hold on to. It's meaningless in that sense, but not in that it has no point and no idea. And when we get to translation in the book where it's always meaningless, it confuses the idea. It's a series of breaths. And Ian Proven, in his commentary on Ecclesiastes, he says you should translate it something like this: the merest of breaths, says Kohelet, the merest of breaths, everything is a breath. And this is, as he writes, the foundational truth of which Kohelet premises all his words are is that life is like a breath. It's there and then suddenly it's gone. It's an exhale of that. And so Kohelet deals with all these aspects of life and how it's beyond grasp sometimes. And he deals with life, death, wealth, legacy, pursuits, and it all is these things that he is wrestling with. He's wrestling with meaning, the purpose of it all. And he goes round and round as he wrestles in his journey, and he seemingly contradicts himself at times as he's trying to figure out what this is all about. And sometimes the book is almost a little bit messy, a little bit difficult, and doesn't that reflect the true nature of life and wrestling? And to quote Ian Proven again, he says here, he is responding to a messy universe. That is why, in the end, his book is somewhat messy, non-linear, and non-systematic. It forms mirrors in its content and its focus of interest. It is difficult to see how any author of intelligence and integrity could approach a complicated universe in a markedly different way. Of course, it had to be a messy wrestling when you're wrestling with the meaning of life and what it means to be here on earth and journeying. So I'd like to go to Ecclesiastes 11, verses 1 to 8, and that is on page, oops, I forgot to type it in, 1003. So it's in my notes. I think I put it in, I think I had two slides up there, and I put in the second one and then deleted the first one by accident. Send your grain across the seas, and in time profits will flow back to you. But divide your investments among many places, for you don't know what risks might lie ahead. When clouds are heavy and rain and the rains come down, whether a tree falls north or south, it stays where it falls. Farmers who wait for perfect weather never plant. If they watch every cloud, they never harvest. Just as you cannot understand the path of the wind or the mystery of a tiny baby growing in its mother's womb, so you cannot understand the activity of God, who does all things. Plant your seed in the morning and keep busy all afternoon, for you don't know if profit will come from one activity or another, or maybe both. Light is sweet. How pleasant to see a new day dawning. When people live to be very old, let them rejoice in every day of life. But let them also remember there will be many dark days. Everything still to come is meaningless. Young people, it's wonderful to be young. Enjoy every minute of it. Do everything you want to do. Take it all in. But remember that you must give an account of God to God for everything you do. So refuse to worry and keep your body healthy. But remember that youth, with a whole life before you, is meaningless. So I'd just like to go through this passage briefly. And just highlight a few things. And in verses 1 and 2, it's this idea that it's unclear sometimes where success will come. You work, you do things, you harvest, you perhaps sell your grain, send it on a ship, and perhaps it will return, or perhaps disaster will strike it, or perhaps something will take place. You don't know, and that's the meaninglessness, that's the breadth of the activity, is you don't know what could transpire, what's going to take place. So divide your investments. Be careful with what you're doing, because you don't know what risks are out there. You don't know what's ahead. And verses 3 and 4 kind of highlight that even though we can look at the system of life and how seasons go, we know that it rains, and we definitely know today that it snows. And you can't fully predict the weather. Even though we've gotten much better at it now, weather is unpredictable. We don't know whether it's going to rain, whether it's going to be too hot for the crops to be harvested, we don't know if rain's going to come at the right moment of time. We can look at the meteorite data, and we can look at our meteorological data, and we can kind of predict what's going to take place, but we can't know for sure. There's always changes. There's a variableness. There's a breadth in that opportunity. And we're always struggling with this idea of what time is it? What's happening? What's going to be successful? And it's beyond our grasp, beyond our ability to know. And this is what Qoheleth is talking about, is wrestling with. And the activities of God are beyond our grasp, our ability to discern, our ability to box in and then make decisions based upon those variables. But in this passage that we've read, the push for it isn't to then abandon all work. It isn't to give up. It isn't to say, I can't know these things, so I'm going to sit on the sidelines and not participate in life. It's actually the opposite. It's the work diligently, engage in tasks, even if we're beyond our understanding and our ability to know how our tasks will function and whether they will be successful or not. We're supposed to participate and work diligently in those situations. In many of the translations, you get to the end, you get to verse 10, and it's almost this sort of, it's meaningless, your life is too short, it's pointless. And that's not the direction of Qohelet, at least in my reading and my wrestling with it. It's the idea that life is short, it's a breath, so savor the moment, savor the time, work diligently, work hard. Your life is before you as a youth. Take it with respect and care. Enjoy life. Don't abandon the project. Contribute to work. Contribute to life. Even if you can't predict what the outcomes are, be diligent in your task and to continue along that way. Who knows what will be successful? Who knows how this is going? And that's the wrestling of this passage, this kind of trying to figure out the time, trying to figure out what's going on, but ultimately a push forward to be diligent to work, recognizing that that is creates meaning, that creates opportunity, that creates the rhythm of life. Now, there is always a danger with Old Testament passages and Old Testament texts to kind of push forward into the New Testament so you plane out the wrestling and the conversations that are in the Old Testament. And probably Ecclesiastes, Qohelet is one of the main books that people do that with. And I've decided to share this quote from Ian Provant again. I was reluctant, but then decided at 5 to share it. He says here, a more popular alternative adopted by many Christians is to continue to accept Ecclesiastes in principle as part of the canon, but to ignore it in practice. Whole areas of the modern church, indeed, seem to have adopted this strategy in respect to almost the entire Old Testament. In the mistake can belief that there exists something called New Testament Christianity, is from him, to claim that scriptures are authoritative, however, is in reality ignoring them, is to provoke serious questions about one's integrity. And that is an apology for why I went into Old Testament studies, because these questions that come out of the text can't just be easily ignored. It's part of our Christian scripture, our witness, our relationship, and our journeying with God. And so sometimes people say, well, if Qohelet had just known the plans of Christ, then he wouldn't have had any questions or worries, and it would have just been an easy life for him. And I think all of us can understand that that is not the case. We still, in our daily tasks and our working out what it means to follow after Jesus' life and teachings, we have wrestlings, we have points where we consider, is what we're doing right now meaningful? Is it meaningful work? Is it just meaningless? Is it just a bunch of breaths that amount to nothing? We struggle, we wrestle, and we find ourselves in the place of Qohelet, trying to discern what God's plan is and what the activities are, just like the character in Chasing Francis. We seek transcendent encounters with God. We seek true community. We seek the maintaining for ourselves of dignity and the giving of dignity to others who don't have it. And Jesus has broken in and has restored all things, but sometimes it's easy to look at life and wonder, like Qohelet, what's going on? What is the plan of God? How is God working in this? What is the meaning? One of the ministries of the resurrection is the manner in which these breaths, these tasks, these things that we're contributing to move forward in God's unfolding plan, in God's work of making all things new. And how encountering him, how living in community, how enjoying and creating beauty, how restoring and maintaining dignity culminate in this meaningful event of resurrection and new life and new hope. How the seeds planted in where we're at and in the work that we're doing reap a harvest in the resurrection and new creation. And this is why 1 Corinthians 15, at the end of this wonderful chapter about the mystery of the resurrection, Paul concludes with this statement. So my dear brothers and sisters, be strong and immovable, always working enthusiastically for the Lord, for you know that nothing you do for the Lord is ever useless. Meaning binds all these things together. And we create meaning in this working together in these small tasks as we labor together in the power of the resurrection. These small breaths culminate into something wonderful, even though it's sometimes beyond our grasp and beyond our ability to know. In Chasing Francis, Chase Folsom quotes Wendell Berry in his section on meaning. And it's from this wonderful essay, Christianity and the Survival of Creation. He makes this quote, "The significance and ultimately the quality of the work we do is determined by our understanding of the story in which we are taking part." And so I was reading through that article, and the way Wendell Berry a little bit later ties this all together, I found, was very profound in this working together as being partners in new creation, creating meaning out of the tasks that we do. So I'd like to read an extensive section that's this a little bit below this quote that comes out in Chasing Francis. He says, "It is impossible to see how good work might be accompanied by people who think that our life in this world either signifies nothing or has only a negative significance. If, on the other hand, we believe that we are living souls, God's dust and God's breath, acting our parts among other creatures, all made of the same dust and breath as ourselves, and if we understood that we are free within the obvious limits of mortal human life to do evil or good to ourselves and to other creatures, then all our acts might have a supreme significance. If it is true that we are living souls and mortally free, then we are all artists, all of us makers within mortal terms and limits of our lives, of one another's lives, of things we need and use." I skipped a few paragraphs and I'll continue here. "If we think of ourselves as living souls, immortal creatures living in the midst of a creation that is mostly mysterious, that even when visible is never fully imaginable, and if we see that everything we make or do cannot help but have an everlasting significance for ourselves, for others, and for the world, then we see why some religious teachers have understood work as a form of prayer. We see why the old poets invoked the muse, and we know why George Herbert prayed in his poem Matters," and this is quoting, "Teach me thy love to know that this new light, which I now see, may both the work and workmen show." End quote. And continuing with now Berry, "Work connects us both to creation and to eternity. This is the reason also for Mother Ann Lee's famous instruction, do all your work as though you had a thousand years to live on earth, and as you would if you knew you must die tomorrow." So this is the end of the section I'll read from Wendell Berry. And this sentence sticks out for me. Work connects us to creation, to eternity. The labors that we take, as we work diligently, as we work carefully, and partners with Jesus in his unfolding plan of new creation, connects us to what he has created, and it connects us to eternity. It connects us to him. And so that's why Paul says it, so that we know that the work we do in the Lord is never useless, it's never vain, it's never empty, it's never without significance. We all contribute in our own ways in the places we find ourselves, working diligently for the Lord in this part of connecting to creation, connecting to eternity. The story of God through Jesus bringing all things together, of reconciling the world, all the cosmos to himself. So we are called to work together in community, making beautiful things, restoring dignity, making room for transcendent encounters with God. And sometimes along this way, we'll be wrestling with God about meaning and what we're doing and whether this is meaningful, whether this is significant. But we're called back each time to partner with Jesus with what he's doing, trusting the Spirit to guide us and lead us in the path, to encourage us to be faithful and diligent in community, laboring for what God has for us. As you move to the table, I'd just like to place one image, one thought. And that is, sometimes we don't know the meaning of events or what things are about, and we're all confused. And this always brings me back to thinking about the disciples after Jesus was crucified and how they would have thought, what a pointless journey we were just on. Jesus is dead. He is buried. I'm so confused. But then Sunday morning, resurrection breaks in to new life and creates meaning, the event from which all meaning is then derived in the resurrection, which creates the opportunity to partner with this unfolding plan of God of making all things new. in the resurrection that broke forth in that time. So I encourage you to come to the table tonight and just partner with God and partner with Jesus in the work that he's doing. And the table provides us an opportunity to gather as a community together, recognizing that we do this together through the strength and encouragement of one another. It's a reminder of something beautiful and wonderful in his body and his blood. It's a reminder that he restores and gives dignity. It's a reminder that we can come together and have a transcendent encounter with him. And it's a reminder that he is the one who creates and makes room for meaning for something wonderful together.